This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, September 26th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring accounting firms and taxes, office equipment dealers, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. The current edition is available at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com to register for daily business e-news or for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we continue our examination of the local dairy industry by paying a visit to a dairy processing plant.
Plus, we check in on Restore Humanity's continued work in Kenya. We preview the nonprofit's upcoming fundraiser called Winetopia.
Also, we have the latest installment in our Music Matters series and your chance to win tickets to the King Biscuit Blues Festival.
First, the Walton Arts Center late yesterday afternoon announced plans to expand its Fayetteville campus. Star Theater would be remodeled with a separate entrance plaza, dedicated lobby, and increased seating capacity. The Arts Center will also feature a new, larger main lobby and outdoor plaza that would stretch onto Dixon Street. The larger lobby would provide more space for larger crowds, additional restrooms, and expanded concessions and lobby amenities. Other expansions at the center will include construction of new dressing rooms, production offices, and other office and conference room space. The plans, endorsed yesterday by the Walton Arts Center Council, will include about 30,000 square feet of additional space and will cost about $20 million. According to a tentative timeline given by the Arts Center, expansions to the Fayetteville campus could be finished by 2015, meaning construction of a second campus in Bentonville wouldn't be complete until sometime in 2018. In addition, the Walton Arts Center Board encouraged the Fayetteville City Council to proceed with construction of a new parking deck. The Arts Center's conceptual expansion plans featured designs placing a potential parking deck on the center's campus or on one of the lots adjacent to the center.
A Northwest Arkansas man will spend time in prison for his part in a scheme to sell illegal labor to companies in Arkansas, Mississippi, and Alabama. According to a release by Connor Eldridge, U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Arkansas, Valentino Gutierrez was sentenced Monday to 30 months in prison for employing undocumented workers, distributing counterfeit immigration documents and Social Security cards, and for harboring and shielding undocumented workers for financial gain. Gutierrez pled guilty to the charges in May. In addition to the 30-month sentence handed down by U.S. District Court Judge Jim Larry Hendren, Gutierrez was ordered to pay $10,000 in fines and to serve 2 years supervised release upon completion of the prison sentence.
Governor Mike Beebe is speaking out against a television advertisement paid for by a conservative political group, Americans for Prosperity, in which there are claims that high taxes and government debt are driving people out of the state. The governor tells Roby Brock of Talk Business the ad trashes the state's image.
And I understand politics is not softball, it's a hardball game. And taking off after people and that stuff, that's one thing. Trashing our whole state and trashing all the people that work so hard, all our businesses, all our teachers, all our health care providers, all our parents that have busted their tails to buy into the education improvement, just all of that is trashing our people.
The advertisement is playing in the 1st, 2nd, and 4th districts. In the 3rd district, there is no Democrat opposing incumbent Republican Steve Womack, though Rebecca Kennedy is running for the seat as a Green Party candidate, and David Pangrack is running as a Libertarian. In a Talk Business Hendricks College poll released this weekend, Womack leads the other candidates with 58% of the vote. According to that poll, 20.5% of voters are undecided, 15.5% say they support Kennedy, 6.5% are voicing support for Pangrack.
The Springdale City Council last night overturned a Planning Commission decision that would have allowed construction of a 125-foot tall sign to be erected near Interstate 540. In a split 5-3 vote, council members shot down the variance previously approved by the Planning Commission. By the same count, the council also voted against a proposed ordinance that would have created a special visibility district in which the sign could be constructed. Springdale Mayor Doug Sprouse says while he didn't want to speak for each council member, he agrees with last night's decisions.
And at least my reasoning is that we're probably 2 years away from anything opening, from the interchange opening in that area. It'll start construction here within the next few months. And it's awfully early in the process to be granting such a huge variance for something that could negatively impact the quality of development that we hope to see happen for the future of Springdale in that area.
Sprouse says the issue is not with the proposed Love's Travel Center, but he says a 125-foot sign variance is quite a jump from the 60 feet allowed by city ordinance. He is hopeful the vote last night will not scare away the developers from Springdale.
Of course, there are other places in Springdale they could build, too, that they wouldn't need such a large sign. The topography of this particular property and where they were going to put it, they say so that the sign could be visible for the proper distance that they need from the interstate, they needed the 125 feet. That's a tall sign, and that could really set a tone out there that, you know, Springdale has a tremendous investment already in that area, in a beautiful ballpark that that we're so very proud of, and I just think we need to protect that investment, and I believe the council agreed.
Sprouse says the proposed sign was much taller than Rogers, Bentonville, or Fayetteville allow, and that enforcing height restrictions hasn't hurt business development in those cities.
Arkansas women's basketball fans have something to cheer about. Yesterday, the University of Arkansas Athletic Department announced four televised games have been added to the team's schedule for the season. Fox Sports Southwest will pick up the Razorbacks' home conference opener against Texas A&M January 6th, the Razorback game at Mississippi State on February 3rd, and the Arkansas game at Georgia on February 21st. In addition, the SEC Network will air the action when Arkansas hosts Tennessee February 24th. The Razorback men's golf team is back after finishing the PNG Golf Week preview Tuesday at the Capital City Club in Atlanta. Senior Austin Cook finished one over par, leading the team to tie for 11th in the tournament. Overall, the team scored 29 over par, but none of the teams in the tournament finished under par. The Razorbacks return to the links Sunday for the opening round of the OFCC Fighting Illini Invitational.
Tonight's weather forecast calls for partly cloudy skies with a 40% chance of rain and a low of 66 degrees in northwest Arkansas. Expect mostly cloudy skies with a 30% chance of rain and a low of 72 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, we'll have overcast conditions with highs in the low to mid-80s, and there's a 50% chance of rain in northwest Arkansas and a 30% chance of rain in the River Valley. Tomorrow night, overcast conditions will continue with lows in the mid to upper 60s and a 50% chance of rain in northwest Arkansas and a 40% chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley. Yesterday, Ozarks at-largest Jacqueline Froelich took us to visit a family-run Ozarks dairy farm, among 100 still operating in Arkansas. Today, she visits a local dairy processing plant to see how all that raw milk is churned into beverages and creams. And we also learn about how our dairy supply chain is supported by federal policies currently embattled in Congress.
We're in Highland Dairy on 15th Street in South Fayetteville. It smells like a combination of bleach and milk. Every day, a dozen long silver tanker trucks each deliver 5,000 gallons of raw milk collected from local dairy farms to be pasteurized and bottled. Ray Arnold, quality assurance manager, has worked here for 35 years.
This is our raw milk receiving bay. It's where the tankers actually back in after they pick up the milk from the farm. And where we sample the milk.
The milk is lab tested and certified prior to discharge into the plant. And in the processing room, labeled but empty gallon and half gallon plastic jugs snake through conveyors. They land in clusters onto circular filling stations fitted with large rubber nipples that squirt fresh milk into the jugs, which are twisted and capped closed. From there, the bottles are conveyed into a huge chilling room where they're placed into milk crates and stacked onto pallets. You can see your breath in this 10,000 square foot warehouse.
This is our cooler where we load our trucks. Milk comes into here from the bottling room. We turn our inventory over probably 90% every day. Got to keep it fresh, got to keep it on the shelf.
Highland Dairy, established and headquartered in Springfield, Missouri since 1938, operates 8 manufacturing plants with 25 distribution centers in the Mid-South. This milk is shipped to order to regional grocery stores, restaurants, hospitals, and schools.
All white milk products, the whole milk, 2%, 1%, skim, buttermilk, and a fat-free chocolate.
Arkansas ranks high in cotton, rice, and poultry, but when it comes to milk, it's only a drop in the bucket compared to California, Wisconsin, and New York. Nationwide, the dairy industry is a milk machine with an economic output of $140 billion, $29 billion in household earnings, providing 900,000 jobs. Still, small family-operated dairy farms will continue to operate in Arkansas into the foreseeable future, says David Daniel.
And I'm supervisor of member services for Dairy Farmers of America, which is a milk marketing cooperative.
Daniel's region covers eastern Oklahoma, portions of southwest Missouri, and all of Arkansas, where 100 dairies currently operate.
There's a goodly portion in northwest Arkansas, and basically the rest are kind of just scattered throughout the state, down into the river valley, and there's quite a few dairies left in the area, basically north of Morrilton, Center Ridge, to the Damascus area. Then the rest are just pretty scattered. None, of course, in East Arkansas or in Southeast Arkansas.
Which Daniel says is not suitable dairy country, yet that increasingly doesn't matter given the rise of non-pasture concentrated animal feeding operations, which confine as many as 700 milk cows onto fenced dirt lots. Arkansas herds, however, are fortunate to be able to graze on farm fields between twice daily milkings and feedings, but those herds will increasingly become bigger as smaller milk producers sell out.
Particularly here in northwest Arkansas, the price of land got so high that several dairy farmers decided to sell their land rather than continue milking cows because of the price. But by and large, if you look at it across the state and across the southeast area in general, dairy farming, of course, is very demanding. It requires a pretty large investment of not only money, but time and family.
Of the nearly 50,000 farms in Arkansas, only a very small percentage are dairy. In 2010, according to state ag data, your beef producer netted around $520,000 annually. Your poultry producer, $3.3 million. But milk producers would be lucky to squeeze out $22,000 a year. Since 1989, in Arkansas, 752 dairy farms have gone out of business.
Prices are somewhat volatile, and the input costs continue to go up. And, it's just gotten to the point that many of our dairy farms have chose to do other things and quit milking cows.
Milk, a U.S. market commodity, is a huge business. According to USDA, nearly 196 billion pounds of raw milk were produced last year, up nearly 2% from 2010, with California in the lead for fluid milk, butter, ice cream, and non-fat dry milk production, and Wisconsin being the number one cheese producer. And like small dairy farms, local processing plants are also being affected. Here in northwest Arkansas, Kraft Foods, which produces cheese products in Bentonville, is scheduled to close in 2013, affecting 60 jobs. The facility was deemed too small to meet necessary supply chain efficiencies, according to a corporate press release. Again, Dairy Farmers of America Regional Supervisor David Daniel.
But actually, we're down to, a very small number of processors left in the state of Arkansas now as far as, milk receiving plants. You actually have Kraft Bentonville, which is going away soon, and then you have Highland Fayetteville and Fort Smith. And Gold Star, Little Rock are the big ones. And then there's, a couple of little small, like, for example, I know Yarnell's takes a little dab of milk, as does the Eskimo Pie plant in Russellville. So outside of that, that's about the only processors that I'm aware of in Arkansas.
And with Arkansas dairy farms providing less than 20% of milk required for local processing, more will need to be trucked in to meet manufacturing demand.
Well, all across the southeast, milk is hauled in from other large dairy, producing regions. For example, New Mexico, West Texas, Illinois, places like that. Everything moves to the southeast because the whole southeast region of the United States is very much a milk deficit area.
Dairy farmers don't set the price of milk. Rather, the law of supply and demand does. But on average, dairy farmers receive around 30 cents of every consumer dollar spent. And when demand surges, dairy producers hustle to supply more milk by increasing their herd, growing or purchasing more feed, and hiring more hands. But when that market teeters, farmers are left holding the bag. That's why they're looking to Congress for help under a proposed new five-year federal farm bill. The old one is set to expire September 30th.
But we've been very focused for the last 3.5 years on developing a new dairy policy that will meet the needs of dairy producers no matter where they're standing.
Jacqueline Klippenstein is Vice President of Industry Legislative Affairs for the Dairy Farmers of America, based in Kansas City, Missouri. DFA is a milk marketing cooperative comprised of more than 15,000 dairy farmer owners in 48 states. DFA seeks passage of the new Farm Bill's Dairy Security Act.
The policy has several components. The largest one is a dairy producer margin protection program, which provides producers a margin of protection against catastrophic loss, which is something that we saw in 2009 and are going through again in some region of the country again.
Jacqueline Klippenstein's referring to the dairy market crash of 2009 when a booming export market tanked, causing a U.S. glut of milk products and assets. That's why another component of the Dairy Security Act is market stabilization.
So it looks more like a traditional crop insurance program than a dairy program that we've seen in the past.
A vote on the farm bill is not expected. That's because nearly 80% of the measure covers food assistance programs for the poor. And political pundits say neither party want to battle over cost containment of such things, like food stamps, so close to the presidential election. Food entitlement programs will be bridged to a new farm bill decided on after the elections, but smaller and mid-sized dairy farmers will be left out to pasture regarding subsidies and other ag aid programs. And then there's the effects of climate change. In Arkansas, record heat, drought, flood, ice, and snow just over the span of the last 3 years.
The Farm Bill includes within it a few programs that will help some producers through those difficult times. There are a few disaster programs, for example, that provide assistance for weather-related losses. But frankly, nothing in the Farm Bill is going to help some producers rebound from the extremely difficult years that some have faced the last couple of years.
And with weather forecast scientists calling for continued dry and perhaps frigid conditions across much of Arkansas this winter, taking us into next spring, severe drought conditions across much of the northern part of Arkansas, where the dairy industry is centered, may not ease. In the meantime, dairy farmers are culling herds and reducing milk production to keep prices firm moving into 2013. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. An ongoing success story will be celebrated and supported October 12th when Restore Humanity hosts Winetopia at Pratt Place Barn in Fayetteville. The event includes wine, food, music, and a silent auction. The organization is a six-year and counting endeavor between Northwest Arkansas and Africa that's resulted in an orphanage and school in a small Kenyan village. Sarah Fennell is the founder of Restore Humanity. She says the nonprofit has been able to channel support locally to help people halfway around the world.
We've had so much support from the community. I kind of started this just knowing we wanted to help people, but not sure where we were going with it. We helped people in South Africa, but since we've decided to just focus in Kenya and focus on our orphanage there, we've just made amazing progress. But because of the people there and the people here that have helped, I mean, it's just been awesome. Really glad to be a part of it.
This is an effort between kind of getting the inspiration when you were in Africa and then the benefits that are here, and then the orphanage in Kenya. It spans, I don't know how many time zones, a couple of continents.
Right.
it's really amazing that it comes together.
It's pretty awesome. And it's, I love saying this, and I know I've even said it many times on your show, but everything we've done has come from the funding from individuals in Northwest Arkansas. We've had some business support for sure, but it's really come from this community, and that's, I'm really, really proud to say that. And even earlier this year, we had a wine dinner at Bordino's, and that's only 80 people. It's more intimate than Winetopia's a bigger party. But just to see so many of those people that have been there from the beginning and supported, and I had pictures of all of the kids, the most updated photos of all of them. And, you know, it's like they've grown with them. They've never met them, but they're really connected to them, and it's awesome that that can happen, even though they're so far away.
You know, someone from the outside would hear this and think, well, how does that work? Because I don't know how many people who have helped with Restore Humanity have actually met any of the people who they're helping, but it seems counterintuitive that this would work so well.
It's just, I think it's because it's a small group of people and we're doing a very specific thing. And the people that I work with in Kenya, I knew since 2000. I've been really close with their family. So I just work directly with them. And I have kept people, I've tried my best to keep people kind of in touch with the kids as far as, you know, say we have a little boy named Albright and he's now 12 years old. Well, when he moved in, he was 10 years old. And I told people all sorts of stories about him and just fun little stories because he's, you know, Mr. Personality. We've got pictures. And then, you know, like my parents have gone over there. A couple board members have gone over. And so people just continue to connect and follow those pictures. And, you know, social media has helped a lot because they can connect people and see how they grow. So it's neat to just see that, you know. People get really connected with some of the specific kids, even though they haven't met them.
I think we've talked about this before, but there was a certain amount of naivete that you had to have when you started this, right?
Yes. Yes, I'm thankful for it. But
I was going to say, it was probably a valuable
yes
quality to some degree.
Definitely. Yeah, when I started it, I just thought, well, you know, people need help. I want to help people, and there's people here that want to help, so let's do it. And it was a lot more complicated than that, and I've learned quite a bit. But I think you kind of have to have that. You know, and I think that's with any, if you're starting a business, if you're any sort of risk you're taking, it's kind of, you just have to go full force and try it out. And I'm really glad that I did it for sure. But it's been a lot more complicated than I thought it would be, but a learning experience nonetheless.
Did anyone try to tell you you couldn't do it?
Yes. A lot of people told me that. Not that, you know, they appreciated the sentiment, but, and they understood what the intention. They just were like, Sarah, it's so much harder. You don't understand. And I just, you know, going straight ahead. My dad told me in the beginning when I first had the idea, he just said, Sarah, that is so much more work than you understand. And then I kept talking about it. And a couple weeks later, we were sitting at dinner at Bordino's, actually. And he was just like, why can't you do it? You can. You can totally do it. And he got really fired up. And that kind of gave me the, okay, they're standing behind me and they think I can do it. Then got to do it.
Anyone who knows your father that knows it, when he gets fired up and is behind an idea,
It works. It works. And he's really encouraging. Both my parents have been great in that, and they still do it all the time. They're both on my board, and they have been from the beginning, and it's really awesome to have that support from them.
What's happened in the year since we last talked?
Well, actually, because of Winetopia last year, just to say that, Winetopia was the... We had double the amount of people that we've had before. We raised more than double what we raised. And because of that success, we were able to move in three more kids. So now we have three more kids. We have 16 children that are living in the home now. They're all doing great. We've been able to expand our outreach program. We expanded our daycare program, which is part of our outreach program. We're now reaching, through our programs, through the school there, our daycare program, and other outreach, we're reaching over 200 kids in the community. Some of it's just with maybe providing maxi pads for girls that need to go to school. Some of it's paying for school fees or uniforms, or we've even given mattresses to people. The kids are sleeping on the floor. I mean, we're just trying to help however we can and in small ways, a bit by bit, and see what we can do. So,
do you think it makes a difference? You mentioned that it's small and specific. It's Northwest Arkansas. It's this one orphanage. Do you think that it helps that people can see tangible results? I mean, you know where your money is going, and
right,
you can say, here's the box of maxi pads, or here's the wall at, you know, at the orphanage.
Right. It's a pretty awesome thing. I forgot to say this. We every year we do a program with Fayetteville High School. We work with the seniors. They do a research project, kind of help us solve problems. And I told the seniors last year that the primary school had three floors that they needed cemented. And I was like, let's try to get one of their floors cemented. So these kids went out, played music at the farmer's market. You know, they had one person had a job at a smoothie place, and he had, you know, money from that, convinced his boss to get sales from that one day. Somebody sold art. People just did whatever they could. And they raised, I think it was $446, something like that, to cement the floor at the primary school. And it was a really very real thing, and it was just all these kids that were inspired to go do that. And then we matched their rooms. So we cemented those two floors, and then there was only one left. And I thought, well, we've got to do that. But so now at our primary school in that area, there are no more dirt floors, which is a huge deal, not only because it's uncomfortable and, you know, the hygiene aspect of it, but there's also – told you about the thing, jiggers, the sand fleas that get into people's feet and things like that. And so that creates a whole host of problems for kids. So it's really neat that these kids here just got really inspired, wanted to go help, and just we kind of do it piece by piece, and people get to see that. And I think it makes a really big difference.
RestoreHumanity.org on October 12th. Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah Fennell is the founder of Restore Humanity. Winetopia takes place Friday, October 12th at Pratt Place Barn in Fayetteville. It includes wine, food, music, and a silent auction. Tickets until October 5th are $60, then $75 after that date. You can hear more from our conversation, including future plans for Restore Humanity, in an audio extra at OzarksAtLarge.com. You can learn more about Winetopia and Restore Humanity at RestoreHumanity.org. Wednesday, September 26th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown. She is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Let us endorse the quality of this studio.
Because we don't hear the rumble?
Because you don't hear thunka, 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 thunka,
thunka. It's still early.
I was going to say, give us
it's
a couple
still
of days.
Early.
So it is Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue.
Woohoo!
And music starts with the Boston Mountain Playboys at 4 o'clock today on the main stage across from the Walton Art Center. Ruckus plays at 6, Mountain Sprout at 8, and the Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band at 10 o'clock. Admission to those shows is free.
Love free.
Free is good.
The rest of the rally kicks into high gear on Friday with pig races, poker runs, barbecue contests, arena cross.
We're going to stop you.
Yes, we're going to back up.
Back up. Pig race?
Apparently they're having, okay, the fairgrounds is going to be a bigger venue this year.
I've heard this.
And apparently they're having pig races.
I didn't know that pigs raced.
I guess if you yell at a pig, it'll run. If you yell at pretty much anything, it'll run.
This isn't wagering.
No. No, it's just for the fun of watching pigs chase after each other.
I will remain skeptical about the entertainment value of this.
But you're curious, are you not?
I'm curious. I hope they're not hurting the pigs.
Oh,
pigs
no. I don't think
no,
so.
No, no, no.
They're
no.
very smart animals, you know.
They are, but maybe they like to race just like greyhounds. Okay. You never know. And on September 29th, in case you want to be sure you're there or be sure you're not, at 3:30 is the Parade of Power.
Right.
Yes. Just as many people want to know so they can, because if you get stuck trying to turn... But it is a spectacle. It is something to behold.
Oh, man.
It's quite great.
But you need to know that you're going to be stuck in it for a while.
If you're looking forward to it, it can be a lot of fun. If it's a surprise.
It's pretty great if you can get up high. There was one year where I was up over Qdoba in up there, and it's much easier to see all of the things from above.
Do you take ear protection?
No.
I think if you're up above, it's fine. But you could be right by them, and it's lengthy, and it can be loud.
Sure.
I usually dust off my columns about the year that we went to Sturgis.
Oh, right.
And compare. But the fact is that South Dakota's a big, empty state. It dissipates the sound.
Kind of reverberates around here.
The bowl in Fayetteville just
echoes.
But it'll be fun. So when are we going up to get the fried Snickers?
Oh, we're going today.
Yeah. Okay. Mere minutes away, actually.
All right. See y'all. We have things to do.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hey, did you hear Car Talk last week?
If you'll guarantee that this issue goes away, then go ahead and do it. If it doesn't go away, I'm not paying for the breakdown.
You know, we need 100 customers like her.
Yeah, I know.
We have 500 of them now.
I was going to say, you got a snowball's chance of finding someone that's going to do that.
Join us for more keen yet sensitive analysis this week on Car Talk.
The final Car Talk on KUAF, Saturday morning at 9 and again at 3 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. Throughout our Music Matters series, Sophie Kidd has highlighted a wide range of instruments from flute to cello to viola. Today, Sophie takes a look at a University of Arkansas student with an eclectic taste in instruments.
That was Molly Cowan in the saxophone, accompanied by the University of Arkansas Jazz Band, performing the song Sing, 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 written by Louis Prima in 1936, and first recorded by him. It became a huge success when covered by Benny Goodman. Molly studied history, anthropology, and of course music at the University of Arkansas. She's studying the saxophone under Professor Stan Morris, and she's always eager to learn and play more instruments, such as bagpipes and didgeridoo. She's a multifaceted 22-year-old individual and comes from a loving and supporting family where music always played a big part.
Well, I started playing, like most people, in beginner band back in middle school. And I started on clarinet, but I didn't like the clarinet much, so I switched saxophone at the first opportunity. And I played alto for 5 years through junior high and into high school. And I started playing tenor and jazz band in high school, and I love the tenor sax. It's my favorite. And I've stayed with tenor sax, and I was a music major for 2 years and through the Razorback Marching Band playing tenor and in the jazz band, and now I play with my fiancé's band sometimes.
Music was always there for Molly, especially when growing up in a family with a musical background.
They always encouraged us. They've always got like this big sound system in the living room, so music was always a big thing. And my grandmother played saxophone. And I remember the first day I got it, I played for 4 hours straight the first day I got my saxophone. I was so excited.
That was another big band arrangement called Midnight Passage, where Molly was playing solo saxophone, accompanied by the University of Arkansas Jazz Band. She explains why she's so attracted to the sound of the instrument.
It's a really unique sound. Like you have with clarinet, it's that woody, like super woodwind sound that's quiet and mellow, but saxophone can encompass a wide range. You have like the nice bright tones that you hear in jazz, but you can hear nice pretty songs. Like I played Clair de Lune once, that was really pretty, a nice little classical song on saxophone, and then I switched mouthpieces and I play a super bright kind of piercing tone with the jazz band sometimes. So it's really versatile and it's just a lot of fun because everybody's like, oh, saxophone, jazz band, yay! I definitely prefer jazz. It's a lot of fun and it allows a greater depth of self-expression. Like with classical music, there's room for interpretation, but most of it's pretty black and white on the page. And with jazz music, you play one song one day and it's one way, and then you play it the next day and it's completely different. So it's a lot more fun, and it's something that I think the saxophone was like, I know it was made before jazz, but it was definitely made for saxophone.
She prefers to play the tenor sax, which is an instrument that first gained popularity in the military band, but became best known to the general public through its frequent use in jazz music.
With that, you have the nice richness that's in there with the tenor, and it's not like squeaky like some of the alto stuff gets, and it's not honky, like you hear a lot of Barry with Elvis music, and it's nice. I like tenor because you hear it a lot in solos. I got told in freshman year that tenor was stupid to major on because nobody ever used tenors, but you really hear tenor in almost everything. Phil Collins, you hear a lot of tenor solos in there. Bruce Springsteen had a tenor player. Lady Gaga featured a tenor player. Pink Floyd has a tenor player. You see altos once in a while and stuff like that, but most of the time it is tenor sax.
She demonstrates different styles in the instrument and emphasizes the importance of improvisation. It is essential to play and interact with other musicians in order to obtain experience and make some good music.
I'll play something that's a nice, soft, like classical type sound, and then I'll do a little bit more brighter jazz thing. If you listen to a lot of stuff, you can develop like a taste for, like, if you listen to a jazz player that you like their sound a lot, and if you listen to them and then you try and imitate it and you just play with it, then you can develop the sound that you like too.
Molly has a passion for learning new things and discovering new sounds. She recently started playing the didgeridoo, an extremely demanding wind instrument developed by Indigenous Australians around 1,500 years ago. It can be described as a natural wooden trumpet or drone pipe.
My main two are saxophone and bagpipes, which are totally useful in everything. But I play a tin whistle and a hornpipe, which is the same, it's played the same as a bagpipe, only it's a little, like, looks like a tin whistle kind of, but it's played like the bagpipes. I really like the didgeridoo. It's something that's, I like the tone of it, and it's a nice, cool, low sound. I like low sounds. I like bass guitar, too. I have a bass that I don't play well either. But the first time I saw a didgeridoo played in person, I was in high school, and we went to see Blast, which is like a marching band on stage. And they took like two like 10-foot didgeridoos and put them up in the balcony in the dark. And then they just started playing, and you heard it, and it was this really low, like, drone, and they make different noises in it, and I always liked it. And my fiance got me my didgeridoo for my birthday this year, and we've been playing around with it. It came with a little instructional DVD. The different sounds they make, like they have a dingo call. It's just a really weird instrument. It's fun to play with, and it's something that nobody else does, because they're like, what, you have a didgeridoo? That's awesome.
Basic circular breathing allows you to play the didgeridoo and breathe at the same time, so the drone continues indefinitely without a pause. It involves using stored air in the cheeks to maintain the vibration of the lips as you breathe in through your nose. Of course, nowadays, the didgeridoo has become a role-playing instrument in the experimental and avant-garde music scene. A 2005 study in the British Medical Journal found that learning and practicing the didgeridoo helped reduce snoring and obstructive sleep apnea by strengthening muscles in the upper airway. Of course, this strengthening happens after the player has mastered the circular breathing technique.
Circular breathe, so they play the whole time. I can't circular breathe yet because it's hard. You're supposed to breathe out and breathe in through your nose at the same time. And I know trumpet players try to do it a lot. I can't do it. I've tried, but I can't do it yet, so I'm working on it. But I've watched them, and you just see them. It's a constant airflow because you just keep seeing it out, and you know they have to be breathing in, and they just play for a long time without stopping. And bagpipe music's like that, but you have the bag on the bagpipes that acts as a second lung, so while you're breathing in, you're pushing on the bag and it blows out. And I'm hoping to go into the Master in the Arts of Teaching program afterwards and teach for a little while before hopefully going to grad school for archaeology, because I'd like to go dig up all old sites and find cool stuff like Egypt.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Sophie Kidd.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Wayne Bell. He writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. Welcome back.
Thank you.
First, we have to talk about Sunday night's Emmy Awards on ABC television. Homeland, the big winner for Drama of the Year.
Yeah, I was surprised. I knew I loved that show, but and you know, you knew some people like Claire Danes would win, but you just didn't have a feeling like
it was going to be the thing that would take down the two AMC shows. And so it was, you know, it was really great. And if people haven't discovered that show, the first season only had 10 or 12 episodes. So you could watch them and then start watching the new season, which starts, you know, quickly.
Well, it's great news for this program because the DVD release was like last week, mm-hmm. the first season. And the new season starts in a week or so.
Right.
So perfectly timed. Mad Men, which had been a perennial winner and had had a season that critics had liked very much, not only didn't win Best Drama, didn't win an award Sunday night.
No, I think they got one creative award and the rest was a shutout. And that is really, I don't know if they were getting a slap for some of the choices they made, which I know we liked, but a lot of critics question. I don't know. I mean, could they really spread the wealth among other shows?
Could it just be a tip of the hat to, as we had mentioned on this program before, there's just a lot of good drama on television right now.
Yeah, and you know, with Mad Men, if it had won 5 in a row, you would have to go, well, gosh, was there nothing else? You know, looking back over time, and there really was so much good TV out there. But, you know, I thought if something was going to beat Mad Men just off, you know, popularity, it'd be like Breaking Bad or Downton Abbey. But they both did get some love in the other categories. But it was Homeland, and I was surprised. And that is a really smart, well-done show. And, you know, on the comedy side, Modern Family, I mean,
third year
we're having
the
same conversation we were having last year at this time that they swept. And then rewarded a pair of their actors again that had already won, which those are great actors. And so you kind of look and you go, well, Modern Family did pretty well. Even Louis C.K.
Won a couple of writing awards. A
couple of writing awards, and they spread the wealth around, Downton Abbey, Homeland. And then Veep, Julia Louis-Dreyfus won. And then just to keep us honest, they give us John Cryer.
Big winners last night. Homeland mm-hmm. has politics at the center of its story.
Right.
Veep,
right,
nonpartisan, you would argue, but it's set against a political backdrop. Then, of course, The Daily Show, SNL, Colbert. Politics playing a very vital, pivotal role in many of the shows. This is an election season. We're about to go into a stretch where politics is really going to dominate, especially for comedy and variety shows. Does politics make for good television?
It can. It depends. I noticed SNL has made a change in their Barack Obama impersonator, and I think that was maybe just to freshen it up. And he's just not as, I mean, he's just, you're not going to get as much out of Barack Obama impersonations as you will out of Sarah Palin or George Bush or Bill Clinton.
Well, it seems like either of the political President Obama or Governor Romney seem As easily to satire
accessible.
Or parody,
yeah, as easily
as Bill Clinton or George Bush or
Sarah Palin,
right.
So that's interesting for Saturday Night Live, and then Daily Show, Colbert, Bill Maher, all of those shows. This is their prime season.
The difference, of course, Saturday Night Live, I think, has a more difficult job. Because whereas Bill Maher and Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart and others can use the real-life events and sort of riff off of them, I think we still expect Saturday Night Live to give us skits. So mm-hmm. we want to see a caricature of a politician doing something funny and unexpected.
The political humor, it's not as thick this time because we don't have both a Democrat and a Republican. We didn't have a primary for both parties.
Right.
I mean, it seems kind of like the election is in November, you know, in a way, because it's not like there was this long, huge buildup like last time. But, you know, we've had some moments. We had Clint Eastwood with his chair, and we had Bill Clinton coming out and re-energizing that party. And so it's interesting.
You know, Saturday Night Live did a filmed segment on Clint Eastwood in the chair, and I thought it was a swing and a miss. I thought it was about Clint Eastwood going on tour with the chair,
uh-huh.
and I just didn't think it was funny at all. I thought they missed a huge opportunity there. But I will say, I think the funniest thing I've seen, the smartest thing I've seen in this political season was something that Saturday Night Live ran this week about the undecided voter.
This election will determine the future of our country. And this election will be determined by the undecided voter.
It seems that more than 96% of voters have already made up their minds about this election. Well, I guess some of us are just a little bit harder to please. We're not impressed by political spin or 30-second sound bites. Before you get our vote, you're gonna have to answer some questions. Questions like,
when is the election? How soon do we have to decide?
What are the names of the two people running? And be specific.
Who is the president right now? Is he or she running?
You know, when they're on, they're on. It's not as frequent.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. Wayne, thank you.
Thank you.
In Afghanistan, the vast majority of missions in recent months were joint operations, where NATO troops paired with Afghan forces. Most of those joint operations are now on hold after dozens of NATO troops were killed by Afghans in uniform. I'm Neil Conan. If we're not training Afghans, can they ever take on the Taliban? Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
And as promised,
yes.
If you heard our promo during Morning Edition this morning, chance for you to win free wristbands to the one and only King Biscuit Blues Festival that takes place in Helena, West Helena, October 4th, 5th, and 6th. That's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We have two winners.
Okay.
One person will win two of the wristbands, so you can take a friend.
Uh-huh.
One person will win one, so you'll get in free, but if you take someone with you, you'll have to pay for them.
Okay.
Here's the deal. Paul Kelso, our blues guy, came up with this question. There are 12 acts on this year's stages that also played in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
If you can tell me two or more, we put you in for the big prize. Everybody else goes in for one.
Okay.
Here's the deal. We're going to make it real easy.
Oh.
In a few minutes on Facebook, I'll tell you one of them.
Okay.
Later today, if you follow the Ozarks at Large Twitter feed, I'll tell you another.
So there you go.
And I'll give you a big hint right now. One of them is a Northwest Arkansas-based band called the Blank Brothers.
Nice.
Okay. Ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
That's where you can email your answers.
Right. Watch Facebook for another and Twitter for a third.
Good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, September the 26th, 2012. It's the birthday of Thomas Stearns Eliot, born in St. Louis, 1888, who at the age of 27 wrote the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, and at the age of 34 wrote The Wasteland. Somebody once said to T.S. Eliot that most editors are failed writers. Eliot said, yes, so are most writers. It's the birthday of the novelist Jane Smiley, born in Los Angeles, 1949. Parents divorced when she was quite young. She went to live with her mother, who was a journalist, on the outskirts of St. Louis. Went to Vassar, started writing while she was teaching English at Iowa State University. And in the last 30 years, she's written about horse training and the Iraq War, about motherhood, a distant relative obsessed with discrediting Einstein. In 1992, she published her novel A Thousand Acres, a sort of retelling of King Lear from the perspective of two sisters living with the fallout of their abusive father. Most recent novel, Private Life, following the lives of Margaret Mayfield and her husband, Andrew Early, a brilliant scientist who gradually becomes unhinged as he descends into delusional competition with fellow scientists. Jane Smiley, who lives now in Northern California, where she teaches classes in horse training, she says, as soon as you're riding horses seriously, you're being disciplined on a daily basis on how ignorant you are and how much there is left for you to learn. The great thing is that the fun gets greater as you get better, and there's no glass ceiling. It's the birthday of the composer George Gershwin, born Jacob Gershwin in Brooklyn, 1898, middle child in a family of Russian Jewish immigrants. His father bought a piano for Ira Gershwin, the brother, and George sat right down and started to play. At 15, he left school to work on Tin Pan Alley as a song plugger, as sort of a house musician for the music companies. Started writing his own songs, wrote a big hit called Swanee, and then with his brother Ira began composing Broadway musicals, Funny Face and Strike Up the Band. At the age of 25, he wrote Rhapsody in Blue, later An American in Paris, and then his folk opera Porgy and Bess in 1935. In 1936, Porgy and Bess played at the National Theater in Washington, D.C., and the last performance was integrated. It was the first ever integrated show at that theater. Here's a poem for today by Richard Wilbur, entitled In Trackless Woods. In trackless woods, it puzzled me to find four great rock maples, seemingly aligned, as if they had been set out in a row before some house a century ago, to edge the property and lend some shade. I looked to see if ancient wheels had made old ruts to which the trees ran parallel, but there were none, so far as I could tell. There'd been no roadway, nor could I find the square depression of a cellar anywhere. And so I tramped on further to survey amazing patterns in a hornbeam spray or spirals in a pine cone under trees not subject to our stiff geometries. Richard Wilbur's poem In Trackless Woods, from his collected poems 1943 to 2004, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KUAF is supported by Ozark Natural Foods, Northwest Arkansas's consumer-owned food co-op since 1971, offering local organic produce and all-natural groceries, bulk foods, health and wellness products, and a full-service deli. Ozark Natural Foods is located in the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center or on the web at ozarknaturalfoods.com. The Bentonville Farmers Market is open 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. each Saturday morning and 10 to 2 on Wednesdays. Located in Lawrence Plaza, just north of the downtown square, this market offers fresh produce, meats, cheeses, breads, and coffees, as well as handmade crafts, cooking demonstrations, and live music. More information is available at downtownbentonville.org or 254-0254.
Remember, if you want to be in the contest for the wristbands for the one and only King Biscuit Blues Festival in Helena, West Helena, OzarksAtLarge@gmail.com. If you can name more than one of the acts that's on the bill this year that was there in 2005, you're in for the big one, which gets you two wristbands. The hints are going to come at Facebook and Twitter later today.
Okay.
We make it very easy. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Short, Oklahoma.
Where is that?
Short is about 6 miles as the crow flies northeast of Long, Oklahoma. if you drove the highways, if you went north on 64B and then east on 101, it's 9 miles.
I'm starting to understand how you feel when I give you my answers about towns. Only fair.
I just thought I'd give you the long and short of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kyle.
You're welcome.
Oh my
You're
gosh.
A rehearsal for Gridiron tonight.
Yes, we're running out of rehearsal dates. The show is next week.
Same time as the Blues Festival.
Yes.
If you don't go to that, go to Gridiron.
You should go to Gridiron on the... next Friday and Saturday.
The 5th and 6th.
Uh-huh.
We'll have a brief preview of it on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yes, we will. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Kyle will be back.
Yes, with Christina Thomas. You and I get together again tomorrow at same place.
You and I get together on Friday.
That's what I meant, yes. Thank you.
Thank you.